Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Howard Zucker, New York State's Health Commissioner, and welcome to today's briefing. Joining me today is Mr. Michael Dowling, the CEO of Northwell Health, to my left, and Dr. David Rich, president of Mount Sinai Hospital, to my right. We are here today to talk about our nursing home report, and we will cover everything in detail. But before delving into the technical aspects of anything, whether it is public health and science or other areas, I believe it is wise to put things into context. So for a few moments, let me do that first. Almost every day for more than 3 months, I joined Governor Cuomo's daily briefings. And as he would say, today is Monday, and we have much to speak about today. Before my time in public service, I worked as an anesthesiologist, as a pediatric cardiologist, and I ran an intensive care unit for many years right here in New York City. I am all too familiar with the pain, the heartache, the agony of illness of all ages. The thousands of images are indelibly etched into my memory. The public health has been introduced to words, though second nature to me, they were new to them: intubation, ventilation, BiPAP. And they've had to grapple with the fear of a virus, something we cannot see as it wreaks havoc on people's lives. And I know it has taken away way too many lives, young and old, previously healthy, and those who are ill. Every day I read the vignette section in the paper where they tell the stories of just a handful of those lives lost. And it took the lives of the most vulnerable, those in nursing homes. It is heartbreaking, and I do feel for those families very much. I know what it is to have someone who is frail. My father died last year in his late 90s at home, and I watched firsthand what it is like to be at that end of the life curve. For the relatives of loved ones in nursing homes who died, my heart goes out to you, to everyone in your families, because between the concerns of your mom and dad and your sister or brother and the daily disruptions of how COVID-19 has affected your immediate family, along with the isolation and the uncertainty, I do get it. So when the rise in deaths in the nursing homes happen, you know, I asked myself as the public health leader, as a scientist, as a doctor in me, and most importantly, even as the son of someone who had a loss recently, I kept asking, what happened? What happened? And it's important to know why, because it matters. It matters for New York. It matters for the nation. It matters to prevent behaviors from repeating themselves. And it matters to bring closure to families, all those families. And just as when in clinical medicine I asked why when someone died, I asked our team to find the answers here. And in medicine, I would delve into the data, the procedures, the information, the steps. It's just how I'm wired. And so we did the same here. But it's important to remember that sometimes what happens is that a narrative gets perpetuated when it's not based on facts. And that narrative, that story, gets swept away as the truth simply by virtue of repetition, whether because of lack of critical thinking or because of malice. Either way, it does not do us as a society any good. So now let's talk about the facts. Let's I'm going to give you some background. COVID-19 has significantly changed how we live, not just in New York, but around the world. This pandemic has rapidly and dramatically altered our everyday lives, introducing social distancing and face mask wearing, school and business closures, and access restrictions to hospitals and other congregate facilities. New York has had 100,000 nursing home residents housed in 613 facilities statewide. New York has had more nursing home residents than any state in the nation, despite being the fourth most populous. Let me just go back. Congregate settings, nursing homes are particularly vulnerable to infectious diseases such as COVID-19. This has been a challenge nationwide since the very beginning of this crisis. The first known COVID-19 positive nursing home residents was identified in Kirkland, Washington in February of 2020. From the beginning, New York State Department of Health undertook aggressive steps to prepare healthcare facilities, including nursing homes, to prevent and control the spread of COVID-19. New York sent over 8.5 million pieces of PPE to the nursing homes around the state. We issued infection control guidance for healthcare facilities, generally and specifically nursing home guidance. We mandated staff temperature checks, face mask use. We canceled group activities within nursing homes, and we suspended nursing home visitation statewide. The purpose of all these actions was to limit the opportunities for nursing home residents to be exposed to COVID-19. We know that despite our best efforts, COVID continued to spread in nursing homes nationwide. From those early days in February through June 26, the virus has infected more than 282,000 people at 12,000 long-term care facilities across the nation. 54,000 residents and staff at these facilities have died from COVID-19. And while, and that's a New York Times article showing those facts. And while the New York Times analysis found that in terms of the percentage of total deaths in nursing homes, New York State ranked 46th in the nation, meaning that 45 states had a greater percentage of fatalities. And even though our per capita nursing home death rate was lower than many other states, we still lost thousands of New Yorkers living in nursing homes. So what happened? We needed to know. So New York State undertook an in-depth analysis of self-reported nursing home data to answer this important question. My department looked at this, and I want to go through that. Just as a summary of findings, we found, and then we'll go through the details, the employee infections were related to the larger community spread, and employee transmission has the strongest correlation to nursing home fatalities. Admission policies were not a significant factor in nursing home fatalities, and data suggests that nursing home quality is not a factor in mortality from COVID. So what happened? How did COVID-19 enter the nursing home? So let's look at the three possibilities. There's the staff, there's the admissions, there's quality. First, we could begin with staff. As the governor has said many times, healthcare workers are the heroes of this pandemic. Whether working in hospitals, in nursing homes, on ambulances, the list goes on. The nursing home staff are incredibly hardworking. They are professionals, all of them. They are dedicated to the residents that they care for. And to care for those who are so frail really does take a special kind of heart. As with other healthcare professionals, many worked right up to the point when their symptoms were evident. Given what we now know about this virus, that shedding can peak before symptom onset, this dedication may have inadvertently led to unintended consequences. Most nursing home residents don't leave the facility very often. Remember, these are their homes, their familiar surroundings, particularly those who are challenged with cognitive issues, memory deficits. These congregate settings allow for frequent mixing, for socialization of residents, something that normally has emotional benefits, but allows for rapid disease transmission. We see this in all types of congregate settings, in schools, in dormitories, in group homes. But unique to nursing homes is that many residents never really travel off the premises. So we asked ourselves, how then did COVID come to them? So to answer that, we asked the nursing home administrators to tell us the first date that they staff experienced symptoms typical of COVID or received a positive test result. We also asked them to quantify how many staff either tested positive or experienced symptoms of COVID. So what does the data show? So a retrospective analysis shows that the earliest recorded staff illness with symptoms similar to COVID was actually at the end of February, February 24th, if you want an exact date. Let's think about that for a minute, okay? The period of time from infection, from the time the virus is in your body to symptoms, is 2 to 14 days. So if you count backwards from them, this could in many cases bring us back to mid-February when the exposures likely occurred. So is that possible? Well, just last week, Mount Sinai shared their data on their antibody study, which showed that COVID-19 was in New York as early as February 1st. And I know Dr. Rich will speak to this afterwards. But back then, we weren't even testing for it. We didn't even have a test. CDC was the only place that a specimen could be evaluated, and for a long time afterwards. In fact, our own Wadsworth Center Laboratory developed the first test for COVID, and that was actually on February 29th. That was the first in the nation, the first test outside of CDC. Back then, we were not even screening for symptoms yet. For the largest number of nursing homes, the first instance of staff reporting COVID-related illness was actually March 16th. As one sees in the peak on that yellow line there, right in front of us. One may ask, well, why does that matter? So let me explain. Because nursing home residents' fatalities peaked on April 8th. You'll see that on the blue line there. Now, April 8th, if you look at the calendar, is actually 23 days after the peak in the nursing homes, first infections among the staff. And that's what the yellow line and the blue line show. That's the 23 days. So one may say, well, why does that matter? Because multiple publications out of the Imperial College of London, other prestigious research institutions, have shown that among people in the general population who died from COVID, the average time, the average span of time from infection to death was 18 to 25 days. And remember that that showed a 23-day period. I want to be clear on this. This is not to place blame at all on nursing home staff or resident fatalities. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to look at the science, try to figure out the answers and the data. I'm sorry. We need to look at this from that moment in time, not from an analysis using knowledge we have subsequently gained in the months since that time. We have to go back to that point in time. So let's stand at that moment in time. What was the landscape then? Many of the COVID-positive nursing home staff were actually asymptomatic. And as just mentioned, testing was not available then. And let's just say, for argument's sake, that there was testing and that they knew they had it, but they did not have symptoms. There was limited testing, and there were no symptoms that they may have known. The extent to which asymptomatic individuals could transmit the disease was just not fully known in March. And on March 16th, a CDC memo said that symptomatic healthcare workers could return to work 3 days after symptoms had resolved and 1 week from initial symptoms. But it did not address the return to work for asymptomatic healthcare workers. And this is not to be critical of CDC either. Everyone did not know. It was a new virus. It is a new virus. And we are learning more each day. Now, let's just return to the nursing home staff. They were hit hard by COVID-19. So why do I say that? By mid-May, nursing homes had reported 37,000 affected staff. In fact, when I learned about this staff, this statistic, I actually said to my team that told me this, I said, you mean 3,700? And they said, no, 37,000. And I was just absolutely shocked by that number. I even remember where I was. I was standing there in my office holding a granola bar, looking down at a textbook of medicine by Harrison's, reading something on immunology. I so vividly remember that moment because 37,000 is an unbelievable number. And we have 158,000 people who work in nursing homes in New York. So this is approximately 24% of the nursing home workforce. Now, interestingly, An independent antibody testing done by a BioReference lab in May showed that the 3,500 nursing home employees that they tested, they found that 29% of them had COVID antibodies. And this is very consistent with our finding. So extrapolating the data to the whole nursing home workforce means that approximately 1 in 4, 1 in 3 nursing home workers had COVID or been exposed to COVID based on antibodies. So you see, as the governor has repeated many times over the past 4 months, and I said this at the beginning, facts matter, and those are the facts. So data about the staff in nursing homes tells us part of the story. And as I said before, there are three possibilities. So what about visitors? So this is harder to assess because we don't have all the critical facts here, and they are more amorphous, and we are left to surmise. But I think it's important to say that up front. We know that nursing home residents are representative of all of society. So deductive logic would say that visitors could also inadvertently bring the virus into the facility right back then at a time when we did not know about the potency of this virus. Remember, this was all happening. As I said before, we have to stand at that moment in time and think about this. And when the fog of war against a biological enemy can unfortunately create casualties. So now let's turn to the admissions and readmissions to the nursing homes from the hospitals, the third possibility. And it goes without saying, but I will mention anyway, most nursing home residents, they're frail. We know that. Their bodies have weathered the test of time. The slightest challenge to their physiology can be catastrophic. They don't bounce back so easily, or they don't bounce back at all. We have all seen this in our lives. This is one of the big challenges that we've had. Disrupting their routine can be detrimental to their health, even so much as sleep patterns, their time for meals. In fact, did you know that just changing your clock on daylight savings time, just doing that can disrupt and have adverse health effects on those who are elderly. So it shows you the fine balance that they are in. I remember when I visited my own grandmother in the nursing home, and I left and I sort of said to myself, she's just not the grandmother that I knew just because of how frail she was, and anything disrupted her health, and even so much as I said about a clock. So balancing the residents' welfare against physical ailments, cognitive deficits, and the effect of transfer trauma, moving a patient from one facility to another facility or from a nursing home to a hospital, bringing them to an unfamiliar environment. This is a challenge to them. The entire healthcare community does what it can to manage nursing home residents' care right there inside the home. And most nursing home patients who went to a hospital during the time that COVID hospitalizations were rising, and the curve that the governor has shown us about the as it peaked and moved up to that peak, they went because of progressing respiratory issues, because managing their health at the facility was no longer possible. And with such a fragile population, such a trip to the hospital was made because the care at the home was not an option now, and the care that was needed had to be taken care of at a hospital. We looked at the admissions to the nursing homes. We focused on the period from March 25th to May 8th. And in that period of time, we had 6,326 COVID-positive patients that were admitted to the nursing homes from the hospitals when COVID hospitalizations were rising. So what did we find? And there are a few key facts here, and it's on this curve. The bottom, obviously, is the calendar. The peak in nursing home fatalities, was on April 8th, and that's the blue line there. The peak in admissions of COVID-positive hospital patients occurred on April 14th. That's the yellow line. So what is strange about that? Well, if the policy was the direct driver in deaths, that some of the press have reported it to be, then the peak of admissions would precede the peak in deaths. It's just the mathematics, the statistics of it. However, it occurred the other way around. If you see, you'll see that the peak in deaths occurred before the peak in admissions. In fact, when you look at the curve, you will see, as the admissions of residents was increasing, the deaths were decreasing. So one may say, well, why is that important? Well, it goes to the false narrative that has been circulating about regarding that March 25th guidance document. The false narrative is that a resident who had COVID brought it from the hospital to the nursing home. But what we have to be is objective, and the data does not support that. The facts show that 310 nursing homes had patients admitted or readmitted to them. So what about those 310 facilities? 252 of them already had COVID in their facility. It is unfortunate, it is sad, but it is true. 81% already had COVID in the nursing homes, in their nursing home. Those are just the facts. Now, a little more about the March 25th guidance document, which we have said many times but bears repeating. You know, the document following the March 13th CMS guidance simply said that no resident shall be denied admission solely because of COVID-positive status. It did not say you must admit residents with COVID. Now, I know this seems a little bit like semantics. It's really not. It's the fact that words do matter. You know, no resident shall be denied does not equal must accept. In fact, by state law and regulation, a nursing home could not accept a COVID-positive person unless the nursing home could provide, and I'm going to quote this right now, is, quote, proper isolation and protective procedures and provide adequate care, end quote. So let me see if I can explain this in a personal way. So I have a medical license, and on my license it says that I am licensed to practice medicine and surgery. That's what it says. I know that I'm licensed to do things, but I know that there are things that I can't do and I would not do. I would not take out your tonsils. I would not replace your hip. What I would do is I would refer you to another physician who can do that. And so without casting any blame, I'm simply saying that if you could not do something, then they should have let us know. And even so, we need to return to the facts. The March 25th guidance was not the driving factor in nursing home deaths. Remember, from what I've said before, COVID-19 was already in the nursing home. You know, as I mentioned a few moments ago, and from innumerable conversations with the hospitals, the vast majority of residents who went to the hospital went because of respiratory issues, invariably COVID, and I'm sure that my esteemed colleagues here can speak more to that fact afterwards. The admissions and readmissions did not introduce COVID into the nursing homes. Next, it is important to address infectivity and how it relates to admissions to nursing homes. You know, this is the world of epidemiology, so let me just walk you through this. Those who became ill from COVID can be contagious starting 2 days before the symptoms appear. So for elderly residents with COVID, subtle symptoms are often difficult to be diagnosed. They're sometimes misattributed just to their own frailty, and people think, oh, maybe it's just this individual is sleeping a little bit more today, and not recognize that those may be the beginning signs of infection.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.